I believe that since we last met, Mr. McCormick and Mr. Fuller have drafted some language in coordination with the university, with the Department of Natural Resources, and I believe the language was vetted by Dakota County as well. I see Mr. Tilley in the room in case it hasn't been vetted. So why don't we get copy, and Senator Moi was there, I was there, Senator Michelle was there, Senator Metzen was there, so we had good input on this, and I think that the parties have some language for conferees to consider. So if we can pass the language out, that would be very helpful. Okay, so there's also an amendment, Pat, or does Mr. Fuller have the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, what's being passed out now, let me up there, is the House language that had been modified after it passed the House, and is the base document we worked from yesterday. And then there's an amendment to that, which is right here, which is the discussions from yesterday. So you can see how it fits in, how it changed from where it was at.
Okay.
And then there's, Mr. Chairman, there's two or three other amendments that came in after that I think have been agreed to, but since this document hadn't been gone out and been looked at and there was some comfort with it, we made separate documents. And Senator Mao asked me to go through the amendment, if you don't mind.
Why don't we ask Mr. Fuller, why don't you go through the amendment?
Okay. So what we're looking at, if you look at the CS0036, that's the land language. That represents the latest agreed-upon language of the House proposal with subsequent changes. And then what's being passed out, what you should look at, is the A1, which reflects the work that was discussed yesterday. And as soon as that's passed out, I'll start talking about it.
I think we're ready to go.
All right. On the A1 amendment, 1.2 to 1.4, in the House language, in the land language, there is a concept called other permitted uses, which is what the universe, or which is what the state can do with the land, essentially. And this broadens that and specifies some things. And you'll see the principal one is the outdoor recreational-based uses. That's to accommodate the regional park concept that might come in. The last three uses, perhaps we're already encompassing the language, but just to be clear, these are some things that DNR, in fact, contemplates there's a high probability of doing. The aquatic management areas, scientific and natural areas. Okay. 1.5, that's a technical change. Section 1.
Senator Pogue-Miller.
I just couldn't notice, kind of, maybe it's subtle, but it appears that the weight of the audience is with the Senate today. It may just be.
Might be the weight.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, I think they just like looking at our faces a little better from the audience.
Nice, Tony. Nice.
You know, Senator Pogomeller, under the joint rules, anything that's past one body is fair game for a conference committee. And, you know, just taking a look at the body of work over the last 2 years that are on the cutting room floor, we could probably fill this room up in a hurry.
There's a couple of university things that I'd like to put in there to help the academic side of it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a note when I look at the audience that it seems to be heavily university. I don't see much in terms of Gopher colors or anything like that. Now, this morning, very seriously, I have a Gopher tie that's a little narrow because I've had it for many, many years, and I almost put that on this morning. Oh, do we have one? Oh, yeah, the maroon and gold. There we got one here. Anyway, I did select the tie that's a little bit more in keeping old-style Gopher tie.
Mr. Chairman, if you really want to make this a festive event for the Gophers.
A bottle opener.
Is that a license
plate? Can we pack that?
Another thing.
Oh, that would be a license plate.
My next to the last day in the legislature, and this is what we've devolved into.
Mr. Chairman, and I have served together for many years, but I think this is the first time that I can recall we've been on a conference committee together.
That's correct, and it's also the first time we've been on a conference committee with Representative Sertich and the first time with Representative Earhart. Mr. Fuller, let's...
Ava's eye have seen way too much of
that. That dates back to the 40s, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Mr.
Fuller. Mr. Fuller, let's try to get through this so we can get to the real issues.
1.6 to 1.9 is language that a House member requested regarding the disposition of income from the leases that the university has on this land, wants it devoted to the maintenance of the land. And on line 7, the word net should be deleted at the request of the university.
That income, okay.
Yeah. Line 110 to 112 builds in the flexibility a little bit, that if you, when the university offers to convey the land, which is buying the bill, that the state can say, this is what how much of it we want. So it gives them the ability to take any or all of it. Lines 13 and 14, there was redundant language. Lines 1.15 to 1.18 address the provision in the House language that provides that if the university or the state does not make any payment, the obligation, their rights in the up to the land and the obligations of the university under the law are null and void. This says the parties can agree otherwise, and it also says that that won't be triggered unless by 2033 all the payments have not been made, just to take away some of the harshness of the penalty. And then the rest of the amendment, in the House language, there was an obligation on the university and the Department of Natural Resources to develop some plans about the use of the land and report back. This enlarges on that because there are some other issues that may need to be addressed to fine-tune the law. And so you'll see that on line 22, Dakota County is included in that process about developing the plan. And then there are new obligations. The Board of Regents shall report back on their cleanup work with the Department of Defense on an annual basis until that issue is resolved. That's 1.24 to 2.7. 2.8 to 3.1 is a report back by the PCA and DNR to the legislature about what their judgment is about who is responsible for cleaning up the land. And this would occur in time for next session. D is a report back concerning how Section 6 is working since it's there's a long-term relation contemplated. We're kind of sending them off on an assignment. We're asking them to come back and tell us how it's working and if there are problems so it can be amended, particularly if there seems to be disputes. We're asking them to to make specific recommendations about a process for resolving disputes. There was a thought about putting in a process right in this amendment, but it was thought that we really don't know what would be required until we have some experience under what sort of disputes are arising, and that would lead us to what sort of process might be the optimal process to prescribe. And then the last one, 2.6 to 2.8, is this issue of the local government involvement, particularly with the local government unit that in which the land is situated, that they should communicate with them about what their intended activities are. And that's what came out of the discussions yesterday. There are some other smaller amendments, but...
Any I will move the 0036 amendment and incorporate the 0036A1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Any discussion? Representative Carlson.
I was one that, although candidates like Winston's raised the question of the process, as I read that, then this report would only determine whether or not the process is necessary. That would be on the second page.
That would be lines 2.2 to 2.5, Representative Carlson.
Where it says the report must, among other things, specify or specifically address the issue of whether a process or mechanism is necessary to resolve disputes.
Mr. Fuller.
I was actually hoping that it would be a little bit stronger at giving them some direction that they should have a process, whether they ever use it or not, but that they have a process for resolving disputes. That's a little different question than simply deciding in the report whether or not they have a process.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, yes, I think there's two aspects of the issue. One is whether there should be a statutory process or mechanism, which is what this was sort of intended to address. And the other one is whether or not there should be a process on their, you know, at their own level that they conceive and are agreeable with. And the reason it was put this way was to leave open the possibility that they would develop a mutually satisfactory one. I would assume if either one is dissatisfied, they would, in fact, come back and ask us to implement one, but it seemed like the sense of the people at that meeting was at this time it might be premature to foreclose their own ability to develop a process. So this is really directed at whether they want a statute. I assume they will make efforts to develop their own process of resolution.
Mr. Chairman, that helps clarify it. Then my intent was not to reestablish a process, but just that we give them direction, too, and I see now the difference. I'm glad we've clarified that. So my intent was that they develop a process for resolving disputes.
And Representative Crawford, I think it's a fair statement to say that Mr. Rotenberg from the General Counsel of the University was there, and Commissioner Jean Merriam was at the meeting, and they both expressed confidence in that process, Representative Carlson. Representative Moore.
Thank you for the promotion.
Oh, Senator Moore.
Again. I'm not surprised that happened. Am I getting a signal? Mr. Chair, if it's your intention to move the CSO 36, there's one small amendment to that.
Okay, Senator Moore.
Has that been passed out to everyone? And Mr. Chair, members, this language, you will see, and I'll give the context. The other night, I had raised the question of how do we assure the public and some of the members in the Senate about the environmental cleanup, Mr. Chair. And we heard the other night from the university, and in subsequent conversations with the university after our meeting, it became pretty clear that the university has been working with the feds, and they're in the process of determining, you know, the type of environmental contamination. And it's pretty probable that once that determination has been made, that the feds are going to step in to clean that up. Because apparently in the original document that transferred the land from the feds to the university, particularly the agreement that involves this parcel of land, the university did not agree to take on that environmental liability, and they're in the process of working with the feds on that. So what we did was to put, does everybody have the amendment? If you would look at page 2, line 32 of the CS 36, what it in essence does is that it takes out the looser language that says, you know, we'll work diligently to resolve its claims against the federal government, to actually put in place the specific programs under which the federal government, once they determine, make a determination of liability, would step in to help with the cleanup. But I thought that was much firmer language. It sends a firmer signal of where the process was actually at, Mr. Chair.
Senator, I view this as much better language than is currently in the bill, and would certainly incorporate it into the 0036 amendment. Any further discussion? Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chairman, I was told this morning there's a typo on line 1.5. It's not Title 42, it's Title 10. Is that correct? Okay, so it should say Title 10.
What?
Of the CS 0039, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that will be corrected in both places, Mr. Fuller?
I don't think so. It's the one.
Just on line.
It's in the one place that's wrong, the other one is correct. Just the one place, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That will be incorporated. Representative Carlson?
Obviously, being on the state level, like to do be an advocate for the state, but can we truly require the federal government to fulfill its obligations? I think we tried that system under the old Articles of Confederation, and it didn't work real well, and we went with a slightly different structure.
Representative Carlson?
Federal-state mm-hmm. relations. I mean, I'm comfortable moving it forward if Mr. Fuller is comfortable in terms of, and I want to ask you as a judge how you would interpret that in a few days.
What I did, Representative Carlson, is I read the sentence in which that language is being inserted, and it makes sense when you do that. It would read, the university shall promptly endeavor and use due diligence to require the government to fulfill its obligations. So, you know, the Articles of the Confederation problem, it's just basically requiring the university to act under specific statutory obligations.
Chairman, you just read it, though, when you said require the government. The amendment says require the federal government.
Well, it says the university shall promptly endeavor and use due diligence to require the federal government under a variety of...
You think we're all right.
The university can't force the federal government to do anything, but they can use due diligence and use statutes that are currently in place to try to prod the federal government into action. I think it's.
You think we're okay?
I think you're in really good shape with this language. If I were the general counsel of the university, I would like this language. Any further discussion? As many as are in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion does prevail.
Mr.
Senator Pogamiller.
Is that then? I think all the land transfer language in the House bill has now been taken care of. There's no additional language there that we need to consider. That's everything, right? Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion to help move the ball here. I'd like to pass out the Sun Tribune article first on sportsman Ophelia tax.
Okay.
To no surprise, at least to some of us who serve on the tax committee, business interests campaigning against the 13% wholesale tax misstated the issue, but just and an economist points out that this is probably mostly going to be absorbed, depends on whether it's a monopoly or not. So my motion though is I understand the governor simply will not accept a revenue source to pay for the stadium. I strongly believe that's a mistake. I do not think that this stadium should be pitted against education, health care, and the general fund, but it's apparent that we're going to have to pit it against the other important items in the general fund. I wholeheartedly oppose that. I think it's wrong. But to try to move this, I would, I don't know if we need an official motion, but the Senate will receive from its request for Memvelia tax. But I think it's important to note that all the hysteria over taxing the kids is silly. If one just spends 1 second thinking about the economics of this, it's an issue of profit and yeah. So anyhow, the Senate, we don't have to talk about the memorabilia tax anymore. And we won't in the tax conference committee either. But it's just silly. It would be better for the University of Minnesota to not have this pitted against the educational mission, healthcare, and other education, and crime, sex offenders, and everything else. And it simply is. Well, it's in the general fund. It simply is pitted against all of that. It's just a factual matter. So, but that issue's over. I told the governor's office that we wouldn't bring it to conference with the tax in here. We met our commitment to the governor on that. It's clear from the governor's comments in the paper that he will not accept the tax under any circumstance, so there's no reason to continue to act like we're going to press the issue. So we're not going to talk about it here or in the tax conference. I hope that shows that we're interested in getting this done. Then, Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Senator Pogomiller.
I would like to move that the Senate language on R2, 219, 220, 221, and 222 be adopted. This prohibits the use of student fees or charges to pay for the stadium. I'd like a roll call.
Members, I think Senator Pogomiller, that's the student fee section.
Correct. Mr. Chair, it's become more apparent to me that this may be less about the student experience and more about revenue at the university. And that's fine. Big time sports is important. I know that at least $3 million of the state contribution is going to go right into the athletic budget here for operating expenses. That's a point that Representative Prinky made on the House floor. I think that's factually correct. And so I don't think there's any need after an 82% increase in undergraduate tuition since 2001 to pile on. It's just not necessary to fund the team.
To speak to the amendment first, I think it would be appropriate to call on President Brunigs and anybody from the university who would be interested in testifying. Welcome back to a committee in room 200, President Brunigs. Adrian will be doing the room. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm Bob Brunigs, President of the University of Minnesota, Chair Abrams, members of the committee. If I could take just a couple of minutes, about 4 years ago, the university started on the path of trying to resolve at least the stadium issue in a joint conference with the Vikings. And out of that experience, when it was considered to be infeasible at least to put a joint stadium on the campus, we set on the path to develop an academic plan, a set of principles, a financial plan, and a strategy to bring the stadium back to campus. And as a part of that, we did have many discussions with our students. We always told our students that the determination of their participation would be the last issue we would resolve, that we would do everything possible to raise private money, and any participation would not exceed, by our agreement with them, $50 a semester. Now, I'll just, I appreciate what Senator Pogomiller has said about the rising cost of tuition. It is a serious problem, not just at the University of Minnesota, but in higher education across the country. I will say, though, that I do not think it is unreasonable for students to pay some modest fee as a contribution to the stadium initiative. They did back in the 1920s when Memorial Stadium was built. The House and Senate passed a bonding bill last year that involved student participation in Duluth for a rec center. This is a common way to fund capital projects on university campuses. I do agree with the proposition that we all ought to work together to make sure that this fee is reasonable and is not burdensome on our students. My own sense is I don't find it as troubling as some people do to have some modest fee. There are 60% of the institutions in this country of our size that have some kind of assessment for intercollegiate athletics. We don't. We fund all of our athletics through direct appropriation inside the university and through the revenue side of our budget. But I'd be happy to answer any specific questions if that'd be helpful.
Any questions for Dr. Bruning? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this question came up, if I recall, in Ways and Means maybe even a year ago when it was before the Higher Ed Funding Division. But could you provide a list and then maybe some testimony now in terms of what some of the student benefits as a result of that contribution would be? And the main reason I'm requesting a list, by the way, I was approached by a member on the House floor that had talked with somebody representing the university and requested such a list and had not yet received it. And I said I would raise that question. So I'm raising it, one, for testimony this morning, but also so I can share that with a fellow House member that made that request.
Okay.
President Brunix.
Chair Abrams, Representative Carlson, in the packet we passed out, there is such a list that we have discussed with student leaders on the University of Minnesota campus and student groups. We haven't completed the actual agreement with students because we felt we ought to wait the outcome and the decision of the legislature before putting the final touches on this. But we've had very extensive, literally hours and hours and hours of discussions with student leaders over the past 3 years, probably hundreds of leaders on the University of Minnesota campus, and they seem to be very much in agreement that this list of potential benefits represents what they hope can be accomplished.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
President Brunix, perhaps now, as you point out, that's still under discussion. Maybe that's one of the issues, because I think she was interested in an updated list.
When she raised
the question formally. So that's still under negotiation when I read
it. Yes, very much under discussion, but the priorities would obviously be affordable season tickets, preferred, seating and location in the stadium to make sure we have a strong student section that you find in many other stadiums around the country. We've talked about other kinds of discounts to university events and venues that I think would be important to pursue. But the primary focus would be to make sure that we keep the ticket prices for students very affordable, and we also have designated seating in the stadium to create a much stronger presence, I think, for our students than we have today. The student participation at the Metrodome is among the lowest in the Big Ten, and one of our priorities is to get a much larger participation level from our student body when this campus comes back, or when this stadium comes back to the University of Minnesota campus.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, not exactly on the fees here, but I recall, Mr. Chairman, when we served together in the Tax Committee, President Bruning testified, and just to refresh my memory, if you could, Mr. President, what percentage of students are living on campus now versus 1980 or so, last 25 years?
President Brunix.
Chair Abrams, Representative Magnus, if you go back to the early 1980s, about 30% of our students at all levels lived on or near the university's Twin Cities campus. That number is close to 70% today. We are largely a residential community, and increasingly so. All freshmen are guaranteed on-campus housing on all the campuses of the University of Minnesota, and so this has really changed from the time my late father-in-law took the streetcar into the University of Minnesota. We used to be a commuting campus, but we're primarily a residential campus today.
Thank you.
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and more question to you and our bill. We leave the... Just to remind me, we do not get into the issue of student fees in our bill at all and kind of leave it open to the university to work with the student body to find the appropriate number. Is that correct, or am I missing looking in our bill?
Representative Sertich, that's correct. We are silent on the issue of student fee. Personally, I think that, I can ask President Brunings the question about what uses are going to be made of the facility. I think that some student fee would be appropriate. I think that with the land transfer and where the money is going to that, I think there's an indication by the university that they were willing to lower the student fee based upon that. I think what I'm hearing Dr. Brunings said is that some student fee is appropriate, and I think that the appropriate question to ask would be, what would be the non-Division I football uses by students of this facility? How would students benefit from having this facility on campus over and above Division I football?
Chair Abrams, Representative Sertich, I think there'd be many such uses. If you look at the major stadiums around the Big Ten, you'll find that they're used for dozens and dozens of events. So Ohio State University, for example, uses its stadium about 150 times a year. This field will have artificial turf. It will be sized for soccer as well as football, so the intramural sports, the soccer teams will play there. Club rooms and suites can be used for career fairs, just to give you a few examples, or conferences 12 months a year. It clearly could be used for high school events. We would want to host as many high school events as possible for football or soccer. The stadium would be used quite extensively by students. We won't have, like the old Memorial Stadium, racquetball and handball courts because we have a rec center, but there'll be extensive intramural use, high school use, and also used by the student body for other purposes.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Brunings, you've also talked about this as being a home for the band, which now has no home, as I understand it, and also a place for commencement, other kind of all university gatherings. Can you give us a little more on that?
Yes, Chair Abrams, Senator Michelle, I should have mentioned that in Memorial Stadium we did have all campus graduations that we could consider ways to expand our graduation ceremonies. It would be places for concerts in the stadium, obviously. Thank you for mentioning the university's marching band. I think one of the great treasures in Minnesota. They have no home. These kids have their instruments stored in a variety of places, and they practice in a variety of places. So there would be a permanent home for the marching band. There would be an athletics hall of fame in the stadium. We are working with veterans organizations across the state to design and build a fitting memorial to the veterans who have served our country and given so much to our state. And so that's also a part of what would be done on this particular site. We wouldn't lose any parking by the siting of the stadium, so there'd still be, during the week and weekends and evenings, very extensive parking for about 2,500 cars on the stadium site.
Any further discussion? My personal view is that there ought to be some fee. As I understand Dr. Brunig's, in the case of the Duluth Rec Center, which is used not only by students for a variety of recreational activities, is used by a variety of University of Minnesota Duluth teams to train and to utilize. I believe that they pay a fee. I know that when Bierman was built, I believe that was built almost entirely on student fees, and all that was there was Division One men's athletics and a couple weight rooms for the football team. I'm not saying that I don't have any flexibility as to maybe putting a little bit more money into the bill to lower the fee, but what I am saying is that a zero fee and a prohibition in the statute is really not something I'm comfortable with at this time. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Brunick, does the student fee blank off at some point?
President Brunick.
Yeah, Chair Abrams, Senator Moore. It would be finished for the stadium at the end of 25 years when we paid off the bonds to support the stadium. So it'd be a 25-year. At least as we've envisioned it now, it'd be approximately 25 years. And it would be phased in over some period, 3-4 years, so that the students who are making some contribution here would actually receive much of the benefit while still serving as students.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
It's no secret my daughter is only 32 days old, and I think that means that she will age in time to participate in payment for the stadium.
Well, Senator Moore, I got some good news for you. I have a sophomore at the university who won't pay the fee, but I have a high school senior who is going to go to the university next year who will pay the fee.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Polamalu.
I just thought it was so obvious, but since everybody's talking about this, I'll just put my student tuition at the U is largely determined by the amount of state appropriation that goes in. In the last several years, there's been massive cuts to the university, and tuition's gone up 82%. Undergraduate tuition's gone up 82% since 2001. This is a simple choice between state revenue versus a $200 tax on students over a four-year period. It's a simple choice. For all the crocodile tears on memorabilia tax and all of this, this is a simple choice, Mr. President. A $200 tax for every student, for nothing, almost nothing. 3 cents for $20 on a twin stadium? This is, let's calculate what this is for the state taxpayer. Almost nothing. This is a simple choice.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we were debating this on the House floor, I asked Phyllis Kahn if she remembered how much she paid as a student in 1920 when they had a fee for the stadium, but she said she couldn't quite remember. Now, does anybody here, relative to the times, it probably wasn't, maybe it wasn't $50 or $100 a year, but it must have been relative to the times. Anybody here have any inkling of what that was at that time? Memorial Stadium was originally built.
And was Memorial Stadium paid for by student fees, Dr. Brown?
Chair Abrams, Representative Earhart.
Earhart with the apples.
There, excuse me. Thinking about the other celebration today. When Memorial Stadium was built, alumni participated in raising a good many of the funds that went into the building of the stadium, but so did students. Students did participate financially, not only there, but in building the student union, in remodeling the student union several times, most recently in the last few years. Back then, when I don't have the precise number, but my father-in-law attended the university in the 1930s, and I believe tuition was roughly about $20 to $25 a quarter during the Great Depression. So I suspect it was somewhere around $20 a quarter. I believe we were on a quarter system at that time.
Sure.
There are just many, many, literally dozens of examples where students participate. In fact, they participate in part through tuition payments and capital projects, academic capital projects, too. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to maintain our classrooms or our buildings. It's one of the sources of revenue that the university has. It's about 20% of our operating budget today. I do take very seriously what Senator Pogumiller said about the rising cost of tuition on, and the burdens on our students and families. It's one of the reasons, as a president, I've made funding for students and support for students a number one priority for private fundraising. It's one of the reasons why we've tried to do everything to restrain the growth of in tuition rates in the last 2 years. In fact, I brought to the board this past 2 weeks a budget that reduced the anticipated tuition rate by about 10% due to some cost reductions we were able to make on the technology side. I think we do have to be mindful of these impacts. I don't believe that $200 over 4 years is a particularly a burdensome problem, but if there is additional money that can be dedicated by the state of Minnesota, I would argue that my top priority would be to reduce the burden on students.
Representative Carlson.
Karen, I have two questions relative to this. The first one deals with the financial part, and if you could share with us what the impact would be on the athletic department and on the funding of the stadium overall without the fee.
President Briggs.
What kind of a fall would create? I don't want to know the dollar amount per se, but the what you're attempting to do, not only with the money, but the dollars going into the athletic department and what that would support.
Chair Abrams, Representative Carlson, let me just back up and say that when we decided to bring this proposal forward, we felt we needed to build a financial plan that would protect the university's academic interests and put a plan forward to the state of Minnesota that would involve, as we do with all capital projects, a reasonable amount of shared responsibility between the university and the state. Mindful of all the things you have to fund, we felt it was appropriate for the university to put a great deal of emphasis on private fundraising and the development of private dollars, and we've raised $55 million to date, and there probably are an additional $5 to $10 million that we're working on right now. Now, with respect to the revenue side of this budget, if you look at the current football revenues of the University of Minnesota in relationship to the Big Ten, we're close to the bottom. That's due to a whole range of things that we could talk about, but it's primarily, in my judgment, due to the revenue plan that we have currently in the Metrodome. If all the operating assumptions are realized that we have in our financial model, and we've modeled this very, very carefully, there would be, in 2008, 2009, probably an additional $3 million to the athletic budget of the University of Minnesota. We believe that needs to go into the athletic budget for a couple of reasons. When we reduced the university's state budget over the past few years by a factor of about 15% in a two-year period, nearly $200 million, I passed some of those reductions on to the athletics department and took some of their state support as a consequence. So their state support is going down about $3 million over a 5 to 6 year period under this plan that we developed about 2 or 3 years ago. In addition to that, we should point out that they pay extraordinary amounts for student tuition, particularly for out-of-state students, so their costs went up during this period at a double-digit rate. So we have a structural deficit problem looming in intercollegiate athletics. I must say that the athletic director, Joel Maturi, has done an extraordinary job in maintaining cost control in the department over the last 4 or 5 years. We've balanced the budget when people projected. Tanya Moulton Brown gave a report to the Board of Regents that projected a cumulative $30 million deficit in athletics by this time, and we've been able to balance the budget. But I don't see us being able to balance the budget without increasing the revenue side of the budget over the next few years, and the consequences if we don't stabilize this budget will be the reduction in sports at the University of Minnesota, an option that I would frankly not like to face.
So, Mr. Chairman, to simplify the answer then, without the fees, it would have a negative impact on the ability of the university to support the other sports, really, that rely on major revenue producers, football, hockey, basketball. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes.
Mr. Senator Pogumiller.
That's Mr. President, no, state money versus student fees. That's the trade-off. State money versus student fees. This is not, if you don't do the student fee, you use state money. That's what the proposal is. The proposal isn't to make the deal smaller for the university.
Mr. Chairman.
State money versus student fees.
Mr. Chairman.
$200 tax on a student versus a penny on a taxpayer.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, for me alone, I would love to put more money into the university generally. Here as well, but that isn't the way it happens to be laid out right now, and I just wanted to know what the impact would be under the dollars that we have before the committee, and that's the purpose of the question. But I did have another question, and I'm not sure that Dr. Brunix is the best one to answer this. I've dealt a lot with financial aid over the years, and when you get away from it for a few months, you forget some of the intricacies of it. Would the student fee be calculated into the cost of attendance relative to getting financial aid, either under the state financial aid program, and then of course the university has developed its own supplementary financial aid program, and I see somebody shaking their head yes, but this would be a part of the cost of attendance, and therefore there would be some aid to offset some of the costs to the students depending on their income.
Dr. Brunix.
Yeah. Chair Abrams, Representative Carlson, if you're talking about the financial aid and scholarship programs for low-income students, the Founders Opportunity Scholarship Award that I announced about 2 years ago funds tuition and fees, required fees for students from low-income families. There'd be some students where you wouldn't get a lot of return benefit or financial support depending upon the family income situation and the assets the family might hold. But generally it would be in the financial aid formula.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, that was the university's own financial aid program. I was really asking about both. Maybe Mr. Bird, do you happen to
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the state financial aid program covers tuition and required fees. So any fee that a student pays generally to be a student is covered, whereas course fees, things that are for specific things that all students pay, are not. So this should be covered under the state financial aid formula.
Thank you.
I think that this issue has been ventilated, and I think we're ready to vote. Ms. Kinzenius, could you please call the roll?
Chair Abrams?
No.
Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Magnus?
No.
Representative Sertich?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Senator Pogamiller?
Yes.
Senator Moore?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni?
Yes.
Senator Michelle?
No.
There being not a majority on both sides, the motion does not prevail. Senator Pogamiller.
One other motion. I've moved that the lines 3.8 and 3.9, the Bickerman Amendment of the Senate bill, be adopted. I think probably then you should have 2.24 probably should be with it then.
Yes. Senator Pogamiller moves the Senate position on lines 2.23, 2.24, 3.8, 3.9, and the note to staff would be this would be the prohibition on non-public funds for the naming rights of the stadium and that the name be Veterans Memorial Stadium. Senator Pogamiller.
Correct. The Veterans Memorial Stadium was a Bickerman Amendment on the Senate floor. I don't think this is a complex issue. It seems to me that state money is the preferable approach here. I know that the Commander's Task Force letters and everything else here characterizes the advertising arrangement with the university as a gift. It's simply not a gift. And I would ask the president, is the $35 million for naming rights an advertising arrangement, or is it a gift?
President Brinks.
Chair Abrams, Senator Pogemiller, I'll give you, it is a corporate sponsorship, and so the stadium carries the TCF Bank name, and there are some modest additional advertisement benefits that go along with it. I would have to say this is a very substantial sponsorship. It's the second largest known sponsorship of a Division I-A for a 1A team that I know of or that we've been able to uncover through our research. And if you ask me, is some portion of this $35 million probably a gift, I would say yes. I mean, I think you can get an awful lot of mileage off $35 million when it comes to advertising and promoting your product. I'm just giving you my own opinion that I think, in part, this is also a commitment of TCF, and I hope some of our other corporate sponsors to the idea of bringing Gopher football back to the campus where it belongs. And so I don't think this is as much a straight commercial commitment as it is sometimes characterized. But it is a corporate sponsorship, and we have a detailed agreement that's available to the public that anyone can review and examine.
Mr. Chairman, just one more.
Senator Pogemiller.
This will get a tax deduction. It's a business expense. Mr. President, I just don't see how you can characterize this as any part of gift. It's relatively inexpensive advertising for this company. And that's fine. It's a business deal. And it's just simply not a gift. And I just don't see, you get a tax deduction as a business expense. I just don't see how you characterize it.
President Branch.
Chair Abrams, I'd like to make, and Senator Pogemiller, I'd like to make a brief comment. When we set out to build the stadium financial plan, we felt it was necessary to go after lead sponsorships and lead gifts. That was one of the ways to keep the cost down for the state, to keep the cost down for the University of Minnesota, to keep the cost down for our students. So I worked on this along with my colleagues for 2 years. I think it is a sound way to fund a part of the stadium costs. I find it far preferable to accept this $35 million than it would be to assess $35 million of additional costs to the state and to students. We just may respectfully disagree on that particular issue, Senator Pogemiller, but I'd rather have the money in the biomedical sciences building as we sit here today and debate this issue than I would to face the fact of giving or face the prospect of giving up this commitment and replacing it either with state money or additional private support. I might also add, as someone who spends a good deal of his life trying to raise private money for the academic mission of the University of Minnesota, I think it would take probably close to 80 to 100 separate substantial commitments to get up to $35 million. And so this is a very substantial commitment. Otherwise, there would be many, many more examples of this size and magnitude around the United States today.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Brunick, we have a list of the University of Minnesota buildings that are named for donors, both on the Twin Cities campus and the Duluth campus. And just out of curiosity, what are the ranges of the contributions for the names of these buildings, in terms of what's the range of contributions to get your name on a University of Minnesota building?
President Branch.
Chair Abrams, Senator Moore, what we try to do in raising private money for a potential naming opportunity on a building is to meet certain standards. First of all, there's a financial standard that we expect, and we like to see the donor provide about close to 25 to 30% of the operating cost of the building in his or her donation. Now, having said that, we don't necessarily apply the total amount to the capital cost of the building. For example, I try in recruiting academic guests to try to get as much money as possible into the academic support of the University of Minnesota, student scholarships, fellowships, academic chairs and professorships. And so some portion might go to the capital side, some portion to go to the of a person's gift to the academic side, but we do try to get close to one-third of the cost of the capital cost if we're going to name something in perpetuity. Having said that, we haven't always achieved that at the University of Minnesota. We've, in fact, in the case of the Wiseman Art Museum, I believe the amount was closer to 20 to 25%.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, I don't know how we can do large higher education projects, whether it's a lab or a new dormitory. I don't know how we can do that in the 21st century without partnerships, without including the private sector. I think that's the present, and I think that's the future. I believe Dr. Brunix and people at Twin City Federal and Best Buy, large alumni donors that have made commitments, they're to be applauded. Thank you. Thank you for helping to take a little of the pressure off the state taxpayer. I think we need these kind of arrangements, and I think you've done kind of a delicate dance over the last 3 years to try to make this work. I think this is how we should do stadiums in Minnesota. I think it's a good role model, and that role model needs to include something like naming rights, something where the private sector can sit at the table with the state, with the university.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Twin City Federal Stadium kind of rolls off my tongue as I look down the list at Fresno State University, the Save Mart Center, Ohio State University, the Value City Arena at Schaffenstein Center, or the University of Cincinnati. All of these are crazy stadiums that have been partially funded by corporate funds. University of Cincinnati, the Fifth Third Arena at Myra H. Shoemaker Center, or University of Louisville with the Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. I think Twin City Federal Stadium is more in tune with the ear than some name that we might put on it. And certainly, as Senator Michelle said, it's very nice to have the partnership and the support of the corporate community.
Members, I think we're going to try to take a vote on the Pogemiller Amendment relatively quickly. I know that the Senate has to come in at 10, and we have the President of the Senate tied up here, and that isn't... Well, it's a good thing that you're here, Senator Metzen. It's a not good thing for the Senate floor. You know, when this first came up, Dr. Brunings, I was a little taken aback, but then there hasn't been very many new Division I football stadiums built outside of Louisville and the Carrier Dome and whatever for a while, and that seems to be the trend. There's one that's not on your list, Casas Arena, that the San Diego State University Aztecs play college basketball on, that's on their campus. And for the new basketball arenas for Division I, that seems to be the mode. And, you know, even though as a kind of a Minnesotan you have that kind of feeling in the pit of your stomach that, gee, what are we doing here, the answer is that this is the way things are done now. And, you know, I think I should commend you for your outreach efforts to the veterans, to the Commander's Task Force, and others, and would, with respect, request people to vote against Senator Pogemiller's amendment. I did not hear a request for a roll call, Senator.
Yes, roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Ms. Benzinas, please take the roll.
Chair Abrams?
No.
Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Magnus?
No.
Representative Sertich?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Senator Povenmire?
Yes.
Senator Moore?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni?
Yes.
Senator Michelle?
No.
Not having a majority of both houses voting in favor of the amendment, the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman, just one last motion to try to wrap this up now. House naming rights, Senate student fee, additional $500 in mitigation, $500,000 in mitigation. So moved.
No, we certainly, you know, maybe Mr. Fitzenreiter can come forward, who knows the neighborhood issue.
Yeah, where is it?
What would $500,000 do, Mr. Fitzenreiter, to the Neighborhood Mitigation Fund?
Mr. Chairman, members, we have arranged and been working with the neighborhoods for quite some time to make sure that we're as good a neighbors as we possibly can be with respect to the stadium. We budgeted $800,000 as part of the $248 million stadium. We raised that to an additional $200,000 to $1 million in order to work with the neighborhoods and reach agreement. We think the neighborhoods are comfortable. We understand that they would appreciate additional funds. They have many issues, and we're committed to working with them. If it's the wisdom of the committee to add to the mitigation fund, we're fine with that. We want to make sure, however, that there would not be an overall cap on the stadium, because right now in the legislation there's a $248 million cap. So if we add another $500,000, that's potentially just fewer seats. So if we could make sure that we don't have the cap, we'll work with you on how much you'd like to have in the stadium.
Mr. Fitzgerald, Senator Pogemiller and I have talked informally that we are going to be making a cleanup motion on some time dealing with the cap. It takes away flexibility. If you were more successful in raising dollars and there was a plaza or something that went up that was more than the $248 for construction of the stadium, it could be construed. So, you know, I think that everybody understands that flexibility. But before we... No, I don't. I still have problems with the student fee issue, but in order to try to understand the mitigation issue, you think that the money could be well spent and well used by the neighborhood, not only for the mitigation of the stadium, but there's going to be hopefully four or five biomedical science research facilities going up and a number of other things going on that kind of setting an encroach on that neighborhood, and this money could go a long way to help some of those neighborhood problems.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, and we also support the Senate language that has the further study and discussion between the universities, the city of Minneapolis, and the neighborhoods. That's also a very good provision.
Okay, yeah, that's already been adopted. Well, from a House perspective, you know, we certainly appreciate the offer, Senator Pogemiller. What I told you informally that we're thinking about doing is maybe increasing the $9.4 million to some other number in the bill with a promise on tape by President Brunings that those dollars would go to reduce the student fee. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with language directing the board in such a prescriptive manner. The House bill is silent on the student fee issue, but at this time I think we're close, but I think that I would recommend a no vote. So why don't we take the vote and then call the chair, and we'll be in contact as to when. Many are in favor of the Pogemiller motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. No, motion does not prevail. We will be recessed to the call of the chair. Taxes is meeting when, Senator Pogemiller?
2:00.
I would suspect, how long do you think that taxes is going to go? Well, given you want to have a break in order to...
No, we'll take a break if necessary. If necessary, we'll take a break.